Hello. It's good to be with you today. If we don't know each other, my name is Luke, and I'm on our pastoral team. And I have the joy today to continue our journey through the Gospel of Luke in chapter 8. So if you have a Bible, I'm going to invite you to open it up. If not, the text is going to be on the screen in front of you in just a moment, and I'll read it for us. Today we're looking at Luke chapter 8, verses 26 through 39. So they arrived in the region of the Gerasenes, across the lake from Galilee. As Jesus was climbing out of the boat, a man who was possessed by demons came out to meet him. For a long time he had been homeless and naked, living in a cemetery outside the town. As soon as he saw Jesus, he shrieked and fell down in front of him. Then he screamed, "Why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Please, I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had already commanded the evil spirit to come out of him. This spirit had often taken control of the man. Even when he was placed under guard and put in chains and shackles, he simply broke them and crushed and rushed out into the wilderness, completely under the demon's power. Jesus demanded, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, for he was filled with many demons. The demons kept begging Jesus not to send them into the bottomless pit. There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby, and the demons begged him to let them enter the pigs. So Jesus gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the entire herd plunged into the steep hillside, into the lake, and drowned. When the herdsmen saw it, they fled to the nearby town and surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been freed from the demons. He was sitting at Jesus' feet, fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. Then those who had seen what had happened told the others how the demon-possessed man had been healed, and all the people in the region of the Gerasenes begged Jesus to go away and leave them alone, for a great wave of fear swept over them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left, crossing back to the other side of the lake. The man who had been freed from the demons begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him home, saying, "No, go back to your family and tell them everything God has done for you." So he went all through the town proclaiming the great things Jesus had done for him. You know, if that story sounded strange and dramatic, well, then you heard it right. Sometimes a big part of being a Christian is simply listening to the stories about Jesus and learning to see God through him. When our picture of God can be painted by so many competing imposters, so much of a life of faith is relentlessly concentrating on Jesus and allowing him to shape our vision of God and of ourselves, which are often surprising visions. I heard a story once of a young boy who came home from Sunday school one day and was walking around his house and was periodically pounding his chest with his fist. And after about an hour of this, his mother got worried and she asked him what he was doing. The boy said that the Sunday school teacher had told him that Jesus was living in his heart, and so he thought it would be fun to try and knock Jesus over. Well, the Jesus that we meet in Luke chapter 8 doesn't seem to be the kind of character that can be easily knocked over. We don't meet a plush toy version of Jesus, but a figure who's full of authority. And when he turns up and God's power works through him, people are left with more questions than answers. Namely, who is this guy? Jesus is doing the stuff that people expect only God can do, And so it's only natural that they're stunned. Sometimes, as this story says, even frightened. It's important to hear this story in connection with the others that surround it. Jesus has just exercised calm control over natural powers, the wind and the waves, in the story that we heard last week. And now he's demonstrating calm control over evil powers, in this case, what Luke calls an unclean spirit. So this sequence is about as theatrical as they come. And you'll notice that Luke has a flair for painting dramatic scenes. I think if the Gospel of Luke were to be taken seriously enough to be turned into a blockbuster movie, it would probably demand a monstrous budget. There's wild storms. There's vast landscapes. There's thousands of people. This story is as big and as bold as they come. And yet, Luke's gospel is also as intimate and as human as they come. That's what we find in this story too. It's big and it's bold, and yet it's intimate. It's human in the best sense of the word. Probably the first thing that we should note in the story is that Jesus has gone where he shouldn't. Jesus has crossed to the wrong side of the tracks. I was traveling once and stopped in a new city just for one night. And as we were settling in, our host was kind enough to take out a map and to point out to us where the shops and the restaurants were. But then he took a pen and he drew a line and he drew it across a particular street. And he said, "Now, you really shouldn't go past this street into this neighborhood. You needn't go there, and you don't want to go there." We got the picture. Well, in reading the Gospel of Luke, it doesn't seem like anybody ever did that for Jesus, because he's always wandering and venturing into territory that other people seem to deem unsafe, unclean, even immoral. Jesus is no respecter of the lines that we draw on our maps. He's quite confident that the whole world is God's world to which he has been sent. And so, after crossing to the other side of the lake, Jesus ends up in this spot that nice Jewish boys and girls didn't usually go because of ethnic and religious difference. It's a place that today is still divided. It's still divided by difference. It's defined by difference. So Jesus is on what some would consider to be the wrong side of the tracks, which is this reoccurring theme if you pay close attention to the Gospel of Luke. If you're familiar with the stories, just think of the grubby shepherds at Jesus' birth, or perhaps Zacchaeus, the corrupt tax collector that climbs a tree to see if he can spot Jesus. Luke gives us story after story about places and characters that upon first impression, we might assume God would rather keep at arm's length. This is a story, then, for the outsiders. Some have called it a gospel for the outsiders. And it always asks us desperately important questions. We're asked first if we see ourselves as too grimy, as too lost for God to bring us home. And then it asks us if we assume that there are others in the world who are unwanted by God. Then, of course, the gospel does something surprising. It invites us to trust that God is on the hunt for all of us, that we're all wanted by our Creator, even if nobody else wants us. We don't really know why Jesus ended up on the other side of the lake. Kirsten mentioned last week that maybe he went just for a bit of a rest, a bit of a holiday. Maybe he went there to rescue the man living among the tombs. Maybe he went there for concern for the whole region. We don't know. What matters most in this story is to hear that no part of town is too sketchy for Jesus. No darkness is too disturbing for him. As we hear early in Luke's gospel, Jesus comes to give light to those sitting in darkness and in the shadow of death. Now, if Jesus' disciples were a little nervous about crossing to the wrong side of the tracks, their nerves were validated by what happens next. No sooner had Jesus stepped foot on dry land than this man under demonic possession comes shrieking out of a cemetery. It's tempting to want to explain away or sanitize the story. But evil powers coming out to face Jesus head on is something we find throughout the Gospels. And we know that evil power is still at work around us today as we experience evil ourselves in various forms in the world. The evil power at work in this story is particularly nasty, as we're told that the man had been tormented for quite some time. We're told that he wandered around. We're told that he broke free from the horrendous conditions that he was restrained in order to keep the rest of the community safe. Whatever questions that we might have about evil or demonic power, whatever curiosities that we might carry, just imagine this man and his suffering. And let that cold curiosity take a bit of a back seat to compassion for a moment. This man lives in the dark, in the literal shadow of death, in a cemetery. Imagine his body. Imagine his scars, his hair length. Imagine his smell. Luke tells us that he's naked. Go ahead and picture him. And then imagine how Jesus changes his life in an instant. No sooner do we hear Jesus' interaction with this evil spirit than Luke tells us that Jesus has already ordered it to let the man go. Here is Jesus, a traveling light. Darkness is simply dispelled at his presence, and the only thing that this spirit can do is to ask Jesus permission as where to go next. Luke tells us that it ends up in a herd of pigs, and death follows evil, as it always does. For all of the questions that we might have around this story, it's important not to miss the forest for the trees. That evil is at work in the world in many forms, ruining many lives, is something that we see all around us everywhere. The point Luke is making here is that when it's Jesus versus evil, when it's light versus darkness, Jesus always comes out on top. In fact, there's never even a contest. What Luke is saying between the story of the wind and the waves and the story about the demon-possessed man is that no storm thrown at Jesus can drown him. So if we have fear about evil power in any form, we should always come back to the fact that Jesus has total jurisdiction in God's world. There's no tug of war. Perfect love casts out all fear. Jesus brings peace earlier to the wind and to the waves, and now he's bringing peace to the tormented body of this man. So quite quickly, the story turns from this demonic, dramatic moment to the man sitting at Jesus' feet, fully clothed and at peace, just like the wind and the waves were calmed at Jesus' command. That might be something for us to hear today. No storm thrown at Jesus can drown him. External or internal? International or intimate? Out there or in here? No storm thrown at Jesus can drown him. A life of faith, then, is trusting that the one who is bringing the world into rest and calm is doing that for us also, you and me included. We're not fully there yet. When we look out into the world, we can still see that it's bathed in many ways in darkness and in chaos, awaiting a full measure of peace and light. But total peace is where we're headed, which is ultimately the great hope of the gospel. And stories like the one that we're reading today were the first hopeful signs of what is still unfolding through our world, in our world, and through us, as we turn up to be God's body language, to be God's light, to be God's peace in the chaos and the evil that we face each day. No storm thrown at Jesus can drown him. No storm thrown at us, bearers of Jesus' light and peace filled with Jesus' spirit, can ultimately drown us either. So whatever evil or chaos that we might face, even this week, out there, maybe even in here, we can be comforted by that truth. Light in the end always evicts darkness. In John's gospel, we famously hear, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never consume it." Now, that said, as dismal as darkness can be, some people would rather put up with darkness. Some people would ever put up with it rather than have Jesus move in and to disrupt the status quo. And there may be something in that for us too. Are there times where Jesus' presence becomes inconvenient because his light will disrupt the darkness that we've gotten used to, either in our hearts or in our own communities? Is there a danger of becoming comfortable with the darkness that others are sitting in? It has to be said that there is an economic reality to this story and the loss of the herd of pigs and the villagers who are displeased with Jesus. Are some in this story more concerned about the financial downside of Jesus' presence than the freedom of the man living in the cemetery? It's an important question to ask, because a life of faith is about welcoming God's light, not just for ourselves, but also for the communities in which we live, including, we could add, our global community. We've been hearing, tragically, recently about more refugees who are setting out in rafts trying to find safety in a new place and drowning on the way. That's darkness. Does it bother us? We've been hearing statistics of overdose increases in Vancouver's downtown east side. That's darkness. Does it bother us? We know about the famine in Yemen. That's darkness. Does it bother us? There are still dozens of First Nations communities in Canada without clean drinking water. That's darkness. Does it bother us? Well, we could go on and on. Luke's gospel is pretty clear that as Jesus' followers, we should never be comfortable with darkness, especially when we see the oppression of those on the fringes of our society, even those that we might think of people who are living on the wrong side of the tracks. And this is because Jesus doesn't care about the lines we draw. The whole world is God's world to which he is sent. But now we're getting closer to the heart of the story. Once the dust settles, we see a man sitting at Jesus' feet, deeply changed and at peace. And naturally, he asks Jesus if he can stay with him and go where Jesus goes. And you know, I think that I would too. But wouldn't you know it, Jesus actually has the nerve to tell him that he can't come with. You'll notice in the Gospels that Jesus seems to tell people to go as much as he tells people to come with him, sometimes even more so. And this doesn't mean that they're not cared for. It just means that they have been commissioned by him. This man's role, as we see the story unfold, isn't to follow Jesus elsewhere, but is to go and to bear witness to the total freedom that he has received, the blessing of God on the wrong side of the tracks. So total is his salvation that Jesus feels confident to send the man back to his community to share the news that God's light has broken into the world through his very life. Jesus says, "Go tell them what God did for you." Next, Jesus, we're told, leaves the village because they ask him to go. Jesus isn't like the oppressive Roman legions or the evil powers at work that take what they want. If you tell Jesus to go, he'll leave. He won't force himself on you. But at the same time, Jesus is quite confident that God isn't vacating the premises entirely. God's spirit and light is now in this man, and he's sent to share his story. And here's the crucial moment in the story that Luke tells us. Like Jesus, this man has now become traveling light. You have to wonder if Luke's note about the man being fully clothed and sitting at Jesus' feet isn't this wonderful picture of what happens to us when Jesus sets us free. Jesus makes us fully clothed, totally outfitted to be traveling light, a walking witness to God's restorative power. Despite all the dramatics, you know, personally, I imagine this moment between Jesus and this man as one of the most tender in the Gospels. I imagine this man asking Jesus contritely if he can come with him, and Jesus not responding coldly, but putting his hands maybe on the man's face, staring him deeply into the eyes and saying, "Share your story. Go back to be with the ones that you couldn't live with and love for so long. This is your freedom." That's how I imagine that moment. The story ends with Jesus and the disciples getting back in the boat and the man heading into the town that he'd been locked out of for ages. He's become traveling light. In some way, I think that this story stands for us all. This man stands for us all. Like in other moments in Luke's gospel, the question of someone's name is quite central to the story. And this is the case here too, though it's a little subtle, and if we blink, we'd miss it. This man is no longer defined and controlled by darkness. The name Legion of Evil is not a name he has to carry anymore. He's got a new name. He's got freedom, not shackles. He came to Jesus full of chaos, full of limitation, we could say, living in death, and now he's full of peace and life and possibility. As you've noticed by now, I share a name with the Gospel of Luke, which at times is a little bit awkward and confusing, we admit. But a few years back, I learned that the root of the name Luke is actually light. And so part of my story is about owning my name. And I might not feel, if I'm honest, all that bright and all that sunny all the time. In fact, some days I can feel quite dark. But as a follower of Jesus, as God's child, I'm given my real name and I'm given true freedom. And that name isn't just the one that my parents gave me. Just like the man in this story, because of Jesus, my name is Light. Light. And the same goes for anyone, actually, who puts their trust in Jesus. As darkness is evicted, we are all, when we encounter Jesus, renamed light. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Christians, I think, then, are a little bit like flashlights. Portable lights. Lights that do something about the darkness in the world. Faced by refugees, darkness faced by the homeless, by people living in desperate places like Yemen, or the person perhaps even next door. Lights that do something about the darkness faced by all of the lonely and hopeless people that we bump into day in and day out. This community, this church, has a long history of being traveling light, both locally and globally. And this continues through our global work today, and it continues in our local work through initiatives like Helping Hands that we heard earlier Dave share about and is inviting us to participate in again this year. Helping Hands, giving globally, serving globally, going and doing what we can do, being a traveling light, putting people in touch with God. This is who we are. This is who Jesus names us. "Go and tell them everything God has done for you," says Jesus. You know, as we move into the end of this year, may we hear those words from Jesus and bring a light to those sitting in darkness, under the shadow of death, at every turn. So, however you're wired, however you're gifted, whatever kind of flashlight you are, Jesus' words to you this week are, off you go. Light up the dark. Own your name and be a traveling light.